In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. We listened to part of a recent Homeland Security Senate Committee hearing involving Nick Shirley, James O'Keefe with the O'Keefe Media Group, and Dylan Hettler Gaudette, who serves as the Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs at the Project on Government Oversight. You may have been hearing about these cases of fraud being exposed throughout the last 2 years and thought, this has got to be adding up to a significant number. Well, it's a number that has likely impacted the economy, in my opinion, and that connects with the increase of taxes, the cost of housing, vehicles, medical care, and the general cost of living. When hundreds of billions of taxpayer money evaporate each year, there's a price to pay. This massive wealth transfer has been diminishing the quality of life in this country. That's including the culture of theft and grift that extends into the higher political offices, the heavy psychology of guilt weighing down on the mind every day. They might be always wondering, is this the day things unravel? These people eventually become angry, cold, defensive, and quick to lash out at any accusation. This is the psychology that has permeated the culture within the United States. For example, when several whistleblowers brought the fraud evidence to Minnesota Governor and former U.S. Vice Presidential candidate Tim Walz, it's been alleged that Walz used heavy intimidation tactics to shut them down. Minnesota's fraud model is a pattern that's abused by U.S. citizens and illegals alike. Finally, this grift is being exposed across this nation, especially in states such as Ohio, California, Oregon, Virginia, New York, Arizona, and Washington. Let's go now to part of that Homeland Security Senate Committee hearing.
Thank you, Chairman Paul. The government has a responsibility to ensure that taxpayer dollars are used efficiently, effectively, and responsibly. And when there is evidence of waste, fraud, and abuse in taxpayer-funded programs, the government must take action to recover the cost and hold wrongdoers accountable. My time serving in this committee, I've been proud to work across the aisle with many of my colleagues to improve oversight of taxpayer dollars and fight fraud. I worked with Senator Ernst and Senator Hassan to pass bipartisan legislation to prevent conflicts of interest in federal contracts. After learning that a company was being paid with tax dollars to advise the government on oversight of the pharmaceutical industry while simultaneously being paid by pharma companies to help market their drugs, we passed a bill to end this practice and to make sure that taxpayer dollars are being used in Americans' best interest. I worked with Senator Kennedy to pass a bipartisan bill to improve government data access, which will save millions of taxpayer dollars by preventing improper payments to deceased people. I worked with Senator Carper and Senator McCaskill to block scams that were hurting small businesses by fraudulently selling services to secure government contracts, services that the government already provides to small businesses for free. And when Congress was responding to the unprecedented COVID-19 pandemic with significant emergency spending, I worked with Senator Johnson to establish the Pandemic Response Accountability Committee. We fought to ensure that there were strong oversight mechanisms, including alongside those resources, because we knew that bad actors would try to take advantage of the situation. To date, the PRAC has supported more than 50 investigative partners in over 1,200 investigations and has identified $2.5 billion in potential fraud that the government is now continuing to try to recover. In fact, the PRAC model has been so successful that, Chairman Paul, you worked to expand its oversight responsibilities as part of the Big Beautiful Bill. It is an unfortunate reality that there is always the risk of fraud in government programs, which is why we need strong controls. A strong oversight of government spending to ensure taxpayer dollars are going to help the American people and not the fraudsters. Our federal government had more of these strong oversight mechanisms up until last year, when President Trump fired 19 independent inspector generals in violation of the law. He removed experienced independent investigators with a strong record of identifying waste and fraud and replaced them with cronies. It's hard to overstate the damage that has been done to independent oversight. Many of the watchdogs we count on to identify wrongdoings are now fearful that they will be fired or retaliated against just for doing their job. On top of that, President Trump created DOGE and let inexperienced staffers, led by Elon Musk, make arbitrary cuts across the federal government. DOGE was supposed to save $1 trillion. Instead, their reckless cuts caused chaos and may have actually cost taxpayers more in the long run, as the administration had to rehire workers and reinstate contracts that they canceled. Mr. Chairman, I ask unanimous consent to enter into the record a report that I released last May.
Without objection.
Thank you. This report, which found that the federal government could have saved taxpayers more than $175 billion by implementing recommendations from the 19 independent inspector generals that President Trump fired unlawfully. Far more money than DOGE ever delivered. President Trump is also proposing a new scheme to control federal grant dollars that will allow him to direct taxpayer dollars to political allies and punish partisan enemies, all while undermining independent oversight. Not only have President Trump's actions created an environment where fraud can thrive, but incredibly, he has also pardoned multiple convicted fraudsters who have combined have committed billions of dollars worth of fraud, pardoned by President Trump. These pardons wiped out an estimated $1.3 billion in restitution and have frequently gone to wealthy and well-connected individuals. It sends a signal that you have money or the president's favor, you can commit fraud without consequence. And finally, if we're going to talk about fraud, waste, and abuse, we must also talk about how President Trump has abused his public office to enrich himself and his family, not improve the everyday lives of Americans who or protect taxpayer dollars. Since taking office in 2025, President Trump and his family has made an estimated $2 billion from cryptocurrency alone. And if this committee is serious about tackling fraud, I hope we could work together to hold the administration accountable for the ways in which they have undercut independent oversight and fulfill our own role to conduct oversight of the administration's actions that have unquestionably enabled fraud. We need to restore the strong, experienced, and independent watchdogs who have a proven track record of fighting fraud and getting money back for the American people, rather than amplifying sensationalized social media that takes a more focused on getting views than on actually getting the truth. Mr. Chairman, we share the goal of saving taxpayer dollars and making our government more efficient. And when you're ready to bring in federal officials to testify, conduct oversight, and advance additional legislation to crack down on fraud, my colleagues and I are ready to do the work. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
It is the practice of this committee to swear in witnesses. Will each of you please stand and raise your right hand? Do you swear that the testimony you will give before this committee will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Thank you. You may be seated. Our first witness will be Nick Shirley. He is an independent journalist known for his on-the-ground investigations, which he publishes on his social media pages and the Anti-Fraud Club website. Mr. Shirley.
My name is Nick Shirley. I'm a 100% independent journalist who seeks each day to serve we the people of the United States with the mission to show the world the reality of things as they really are. America was built and created by strong men and women who loved America and never would have thought to rob, steal, or cheat from its very own citizens. Unfortunately today, America's good faith has been abused by others, often foreigners, who seek to harm, rob, and cheat America. Through my efforts, I've exposed billions of dollars of fraud and helped save America hundreds of billions for years to come. When we talk about fraud, We are talking about money that is being stolen from hardworking, law-abiding, tax-paying citizens. This issue has nothing to do with political parties. No dollar says Republican or Democrat on it. When a fraudster commits fraud, he or she steals from all of us. Last December, I published a 43-minute long video exposing widespread fraud in Minnesota. That video became one of the most viewed videos in internet history and gained over 4 billion views in just 7 days across all forms of media. The fraud was so obvious that the fraudsters weren't even trying to hide it. The infamous Quality Clearing Center was born, and that video has become one of the most consequential videos in American history by the amount of legislation it has created. Since posting it, over 30 bills have been created and introduced in Congress regarding fraud. A new fraud task force has been created, and the Treasury is working on new systems to stop fraud at unprecedented levels. I helped ignite a war on fraud across the country. People often wonder, how come this fraud became so big and how come it becomes so rampant? And the reason is because no one actually ever really looked into it. When Elon Musk offered to help by creating Doge, people burned his factories, bombed his cars, and politicians even celebrated his company's stock going down. Elon was right when he said the fraudsters complained the loudest. By exposing the fraud, I actually also exposed the politicians and media who worked for years to cover it up. Governor Tim Walz labeled my work as white supremacy and called me a far-right delusional conspiracy theorist. Meanwhile, he dropped out of re-election, and he even said he has ended his political career. Now, the highest government-funded daycare in Minnesota has pleaded guilty to daycare fraud, and the largest autism bust in American history has been exposed. Where is Tim Walz in the media now? It just so happens that over 80% of the fraud committed in Minnesota is by the Somali population. After Minnesota, I exposed widespread fraud in California within the daycare and hospice community, where an impossible one-third of Americans on hospice care were set to die in Los Angeles. The next day, the governor, Gavin Newsom, posted an AI-generated image of myself trying to mock and discredit my work. Only days later, he and his attorney general both tried to take credit for exposing the fraud. Now the attorney general's wife has created a bill that would make it criminal to expose fraud. The Stop Nick Shirley Act, also known as AB 2624, will help fraudsters cover up their crimes and prevent themselves from being exposed, specifically in immigrant communities. Politicians often use immigrant communities to commit fraud. Why would they allow this to happen? In California, Medi-Cal, their Medicaid program, has now more than doubled from $108 billion in 2022 to a proposed $222 billion, while enrollment has only rose by less than 1%. The system is filled with bad actors and fraudsters. In New York City, government-funded adult daycares pay for elderly Koreans and Chinese to play ping pong and do tai chi at the taxpayers' expense. An impossible number of patients are registered, and those patients receive kickbacks for attending and signing up their friends. Over $2 billion has gone to these fraudsters at the taxpayers' expense. And I am just one person doing the work of many people. If the government and media is not going to do their job to help America, it's the responsibility of strong men and women, however old they may be, to do it. I am doing it. Despite the threats and burdens that come, it must be done. I'm doing it with the help of everyday Americans that government-paid officials are supposed to do. And the media teams across the country have millions of dollars to do this, yet they don't look into this fraud. They've actually quite literally failed us. If we as Americans do not stand up to protect our country, we will lose our country. Fraud is so rampant in the United States, I could go to all 50 states and uncover millions of dollars of tax dollars being defrauded, wasted, and abused. It is my wish while sitting in front of you guys today that you take action and help Americans by cracking down on all of the fraud and to simply put Americans first. Thank you.
Our next witness is James O'Keefe. He's an American investigative journalist and media entrepreneur. He's the founder of Project Veritas and currently serves as the founder and CEO of O'Keefe Media Group. Mr. O'Keefe.
Chairman Paul, Ranking Member Peters, and members of this committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. In February of 2026, I disguised myself as a homeless person and approached a petition circulator on Skid Row near San Pedro and South 6th Street in downtown L.A. I saw cash clipped to his shirt, which I thought was odd. The petition circulator told me, we're going to need 14 signatures and we're going to pay you $2. One of our reporters, disguised as a heroin addict with track marks on his arm, asked the homeless, "What's going on here?" They all replied with one word: money. We recorded a woman named Brown handing over cash as payment in exchange for a homeless person to register to vote in a federal election. Now, that is a federal crime. Congress expressly criminalizes payments to people to register to vote. Why? Because the vote is sacred. It's an act of conscience, of judgment. And when it becomes contaminated by incentives, when it is for sale, it undermines the sanctity and fairness of the process designed to elect those who represent us. Our investigation contributed to a federal criminal prosecution, with U.S. Attorney Bill Esalia saying, "Once I saw these videos, I went to work." Brown described the whole thing as a, quote, pyramid game. And then came the irony. In a neighborhood of NGOs in Los Angeles designed to protect the vulnerable homeless population, the person being confronted by the NGOs was not the fraudster, it was the reporter exposing the fraud. Just minutes after we exposed these felonies, I was approached by a man who identified himself as being with the LAPD, and he began to record me. When I pressed him, he admitted he was actually with the LA Homelessness Authority. Under California law, that's a crime. So this was also a form of fraud, albeit covering up for the fraud happening across the street. But it got worse. We witnessed petition circulators giving marijuana in exchange for signatures on the petitions. And when they spotted our camera, they told one of our reporters, "I'm going to knock your bleeping ass. Don't come over here again. I'm going to beat your ass." He threatened us. So we decided to band together. We formed a Citizen Journalism Justice League, featuring Savannah Hernandez, Cam Higby, Anthony Rubin, and John Tro. And over the next few weeks, we caught dozens of these cash and drug exchanges for signatures on the petitions. Together, over the course of those next few weeks, we released reporting that prompted the governor of California not to attack us, but to say that what we did was important and the activity should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. We also found next ballot petitioners asking homeless to sign in other people's names. We recorded over the shoulder one petitioner who took out his phone to access an online database to pull voter rolls and addresses. Quote, "I have an Idaho address," said the voter. The petitioner says, "I'm going to give you an address to write. Your name is Robert." Another says, "I'm giving you a new name." So we visited the residents of those people who were disenfranchised. One of the names was Vicky Walker. The homeowner at that address said for 9 years he received election mail in the name of this Vicky Walker. In fact, he told me he'd received so many ballots in the name of Vicky Walker, he named his cat Vicky Walker. We returned to ask for comment from the petitioner who was offering drugs in exchange for signatures. The same individual who had threatened us earlier, he grabbed the petitions and hid them in his car. When we caught up to him, one of his associates charged at us and punched my producer in the neck. The two men then charged at me. And right before they struck us, Cam Higby deployed pepper spray. With pepper spray in their eyes, the two men continued to attempt to assail us. My colleague Braden and I had no choice but to run for our lives. To this day, all the fraudsters that committed state crimes roam free. This, as Nick has said, is not a political issue. It's not a partisan issue. It's not a conspiracy theory. And it is most certainly not circumstantial evidence. Everything I've testified to you here, all the quotes and many more, are all recorded on tape. So the question before this committee is not whether the fraud exists or whether it's happening. Oftentimes in politics, y'all debate the facts. The facts are what they are. The question is why the incentives allow it to flourish. There is money in fraud, but there's no money in exposing the fraud. And when laws are ignored without consequences, fraud becomes the incentive. Fraud becomes the model of life. Tony Moore, one of the coordinators for the ballot petitions, told us, if there's no consequences, it doesn't matter. And that's the point. I don't have subpoena power. Us journalists don't have the power to do anything but expose. And they campaign in this building about freedom and protecting democracy and preventing disenfranchisement and how nobody is above the law. But if those principles are not enforced, when they're violated in broad daylight, they're not principles at all. They're slogans. And without accountability, our notion of freedom is just an illusion. Thank you.
Senator Peters will introduce our third witness.
Mr. Dylan Hitler-Gaudet is the acting vice president of policy and government affairs at the Project on Government Oversight, commonly known as POGO. Mr. Hitler-Gaudet is a nationally recognized expert in a range of good government issues, including government ethics, anti-corruption policy, separation of powers, the rule of law, and government operations integrity and effectiveness. He has testified before Congress on 8 separate occasions on a variety of topics, including preventing waste and fraud, defense spending accountability, judicial ethics, and undue foreign influence. Mr. Hitler-Gedet and Pogo have routinely engaged with Congress on bipartisan and pragmatic solutions to address government program integrity and protect taxpayer dollars. Thank you for joining us today, and we appreciate your testimony.
My name is Dylan Hitler-Gedet, and I am the Acting Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs at the Project on Government Oversight. We are a nonpartisan, independent watchdog organization with 45 years of experience in promoting accountability, transparency, and effectiveness in the federal government. If you wouldn't mind, I'd like to start with some data to paint a bit of a picture for us. We currently spend about $7 trillion a year in terms of our federal budget. In fiscal year 2025, we ran a $1.8 trillion federal budget deficit. We currently carry a federal debt load of about $40 trillion. And interest payments on that debt are the third largest annual expenditure we make each year, the fourth largest of which is our defense budget, which now comes in at a cool $1 trillion. And if President Trump has his way, that number will balloon to a staggering $1.5 trillion this year. Why do I start with this big picture data? It's important to realize that vast sums of taxpayer dollars are at stake when we talk about the issues of waste, fraud, and abuse. It's equally important to remember that the federal government has an equally vast responsibility and an obligation to be the best possible and most responsible caretaker and steward of those taxpayers. We have more data that can tell us a little bit about how well the federal government is delivering on it. Recently, the Government Accountability Office issued a report in which it estimated that in fiscal year 2025, the federal government issued $186 billion in improper payments, bringing the total of improper payments issued since fiscal year 2003 to $3 trillion or thereabouts. GAO also estimated that in 2024 alone, we lost somewhere between $230 and $520 billion to fraud. Lastly, GAO tells us and projects that if we were to work harder to eradicate duplication, fragmentation, and overlap in federal government programs, we would be able to save $100 billion a year. Now, what does this data tell us? This tells us pretty categorically that we, and in particular the federal government, are not doing a good enough job overseeing and managing the country's precious public resources. And the only way to get there is to promote actionable, common sense, pragmatic reforms, and it is those exact kinds of reforms that I'm here to talk about today. First, we must look to internal watchdogs and oversight practitioners, such as Inspector General, the Government Accountability Office, the Office of Government Ethics, the Office of Special Counsel, and others. And we must strengthen, empower, and fully resource them to perform their essential functions as the taxpayers' eyes and ears from within the federal government. Second, we must also provide safe and secure reporting and disclosure channels for federal whistleblowers. Courageous individuals from within the government often blow the whistle and expose some of the worst waste, fraud, abuse, corruption, and malfeasance, and they are often all too common on the receiving end of reprisal and retaliation for doing so. It is imperative that Congress create these safe and secure disclosure channels while also strengthening protections from retaliation and reprisal for federal whistleblowers. Lastly, the technical architecture that the federal government currently uses to monitor, track, analyze, and assess federal funding is woefully inadequate. Key databases and resources like usaspending.gov and the System for Award Management are in desperate need of overhaul and modernization. Congress should start by dramatically expanding the quality and quantity of the data and information required to be reported and collected up and down the spending chain. Congress should also work to bring parity in data collection and information reporting across program categories and spending types. Lastly, Congress should also hold federal agencies' feet to the fire to comply with existing reporting and disclosure requirements, which agencies are often not doing at all. The upshot here is that waste, fraud, abuse, and corruption are real, and they are pernicious, and we must do something about them. The only way we're going to solve them is by some of the reforms and others that I have laid out here today, but we're not going to solve them by focusing on sensationalistic anecdotes, clout-chasing viral internet videos, or provocative pseudo-documentaries. We're also not going to solve these problems by demonizing and scapegoating specific communities and constituencies based on partisan, political, and ideological agendas. Thank you again for inviting me here to testify today, and I look forward to your questions.
We're going to begin a round of questions, and I'm going to defer my time to Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we've had in testimony and opening statements a couple jabs, I guess, at Nick Shirley's videos. The only reason that we're taking fraud seriously is because of that independent journalism sitting in front of us. The fact that he exposed in all its gory detail how grotesque and how blatant this fraud is, how rampant it is. So, you know, Mr. Hettler-Gaudet, I agree with most of your prescriptions here. Chairman of the committee, we had you testify. I've been trying to support of Inspector Generals. Now, we've had to got a couple of Inspector Generals resigning ahead of the posse, because they're certainly not perfect as well. The problem I have with all the prescriptions is it hasn't worked. The lowest estimate I hear fraud in the federal government is $250 billion a year. I think you said $230. We had in a subcommittee hearing LexisNexis saying it's $1 trillion. It wasn't really until this administration with DOGE, which is, you know, that effort's also been denigrated here, that we started going in there and actually doing something about it. Now you have Dr. Oz going in, again, I think partly because of Nick Shirley's revelation that a third of the hospice centers were in Los Angeles County. So the way we prevent the fraud is we stopped funding 400 of them, and not one of those hospice centers complained. So it's the tip of the iceberg. Mr. Shirley, again, I commend you on your phenomenal journalism. Quite honestly, when I saw that happening, why didn't I think of that? You know, why didn't my staff do those videos? Journalism is crucial to this. You're a partner in what we need to do. And it's only because of those videos that expose it that we have any chance of trying to rein in this beast. But you mentioned the Stop Nick Shirley Act. What is that? I mean, can you describe that in greater detail?
Yeah, so that's a bill that's been created by Mia Bonta, the wife of the Attorney General of California. And the official title is AB 2624, and it's to provide, make it essentially illegal to expose and to film outside of immigration support service providers. That means any entity that provides services to illegal migrants, whether that be healthcare or legal fees. If I were to go out and film a video in front of one of these locations, perhaps an NGO like CHRLA that's received over $80 million from the government, and they give me a piece of paper and they say, hey, you cannot publish that video. If that bill passes, it'll be illegal for me to.
So it really ought to be renamed the Protect Medicaid Fraudster Act. Would probably be a better description of that, correct?
Correct.
Why do you think you have such pushback from our colleagues on the other side of the aisle, from just the denigration here from the ranking member, from Governor Newsom? Why is that? You would think the trying to eliminate waste, fraud, and abuse would be a completely nonpartisan issue.
Because they quite frankly need the fraud. They actually need the fraud.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Senate Homeland Security Committee hearing titled Exposing Fraud in America.
Did you happen to catch some of those numbers read out by Dylan with Pogo? In the year 2025, the federal government issued $186 billion in improper payments, bringing the total of improper payments issued since fiscal year 2003 to $3 trillion.
And the Government Accountability Office also estimated that in 2024, somewhere between $230 and $520 billion was lost to fraud. I don't understand a discrepancy between $230 and $520. Close to $300 billion, but there it is. Mind you, this is only the fraud that has been brought to the attention of the government, which implies it's more than $520 billion for 2024. It's more than $186 billion of improper payments for 2025. I wonder how improper payouts are allowed to happen, when the tightest calculations are used to extract tax dollars from its citizens. It's not easy to imagine the U.S. government intentionally making hundreds of billions in improper payouts. Let's get back to hear part of the Senate Homeland Security Committee meeting titled Exposing Fraud in America.
You know, Mr. Keefe, and I've got a lot more questions, but I'm not understanding. What were these petitions about? You really have two. They were paying money for signatures on petitions. You're generally pushed forward by non-governmental organizations, which, by the way, we don't track how much money is expended, of the $7.5 trillion expended this year, we have no idea how much funnels eventually through NGOs. But so you have paying dollars for signing petitions, and then you also have paying dollars for voter registration. Have you kind of followed that through? What's that all about?
Yes, Senator. One is a California state crime to fraudulently sign in someone else's name to get something on the California ballot initiative, and the other is a federal crime, where there's federal jurisdiction, where you pay someone in order to get them to register to vote.
So again, these are petitions to get something, a referendum, on the ballot in California.
That's correct.
So what didn't make sense to me about the registrations, they were signing up fake names or fake addresses. I would think, you know, how if you're going to really commit election fraud, you'd sign up legitimate names, legitimate addresses, so that you could basically harvest those ballots and vote for who you wanted to vote. I mean, have you kind of followed that whole?
Yes. In one instance, we looked over the shoulder and a petitioner logged into a website, something called sigvalid.com, and accessed currently registered voters using their real names and real addresses. We were unable to determine or ascertain what this sigvalid.com is, but we believe that your committee has subpoena power to try to find out what that is.
Well, that'd be my offer. Both Chairman Paul and myself have subpoena power. If you need it, we're more than happy to use it. So I'm making that offer to both Mr. Shirley and to you, Mr. O'Keefe.
We'll follow up with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Peters.
Mr. Elder-Gaudette, as you know, President Trump fired 19 inspectors general, the independent watchdogs tasked by Congress with fighting waste, fraud, and abuse in government programs. On May 21, 2025, I issued a report that revealed that in fiscal year 24 alone, those fired IGs had collectively identified over $50 billion of government savings through their work. Since then, President Trump has fired additional IGs and has cut funding and staff to the oversight agencies, some by more than a third. So my question for you, sir, is do partisan attacks on independent oversight benefit fraudsters?
Yes, I would say they absolutely benefit fraudsters. They politicize the entire endeavor of going after waste, fraud, and abuse, which is literally the mission statement and reason for existence of watchdogs like Inspector General.
So how can Congress better support and defend independent and nonpartisan oversight of government programs, in your estimation?
Sure. So I touched on this a little bit in my opening statement and in more detail in my written statement, but there are a number of pre-existing entities such as the Inspector General, such as the Government Accountability Office, we don't need to reinvent the wheel there. We just need to strengthen, empower, and protect those entities. We need to give them the resources they need to conduct their important work of oversight. And most importantly, we need to provide more political insulation and independence so that they can do that work without fear or favor and without being overly meddled with by people with partisan and political agendas, because that's anathema to any effective oversight.
Right. Mr. Elder-Gaudette, POGO has raised concerns about both President Biden and President Trump's use of presidential pardons. This administration has claimed to care about fraud, and yet President Trump has pardoned a staggering number of convicted fraudsters. To date, he has pardoned over two dozen criminals who committed a combined nearly $3 billion in financial crimes and fraud. These pardons also robbed victims of approximately $1.3 billion in restitution payments. They were given to people like Lawrence Duran, who committed $205 million in Medicare fraud, and Trevor Milton, who committed $680 million in securities fraud. Mr. Milton and his wife, not surprisingly, donated $2.5 million to the presidential campaign. So my question for you, sir, is how would you describe pardoning criminal fraudster campaign donors as an effort to combat fraud?
I would describe it as a completely nonsensical approach to rooting out waste, fraud, and abuse. And again, it undermines any claims one might have to caring about waste, fraud, and abuse to pardon convicted fraudsters. And in the case of one Florida woman, a multiply convicted fraudster who was convicted once, got a commutation in Trump's first term, and then was convicted again and got a full pardon in the second term. So that does not seem to me like the action of an entity that actually cares about fraud. Perhaps it's just fraud when it's perpetrated by the right people or the wrong people.
So what do you think Congress should do to rein in the misuse of presidential pardon power?
This is a tricky one. The pardon power is, of course, constitutionally prescribed. It's pretty stark. I have a personal hobby horse view that a constitutional amendment to remove the pardon power should probably be considered because it's a vestigial legacy of a sort of monarchical view of the head of state, which is kind of the whole thing we're supposed to be against here in the United States. We don't like kings, and so the pardon power is very much a kingly, a divine right of kings sort of concept. But barring that, I think there are some sort of common sense, constitutionally viable approaches to more transparency, consultation, reporting and disclosure, and a bit of a kind of, I think, a stronger process from within the DOJ's pardon office.
Thank you. You know, I've been proud to enact bipartisan legislation to improve government data analytics, enhance oversight capabilities, and prevent payments to dead people. However, challenges remain, especially as fraudsters have become more sophisticated and government systems and tools have, quite frankly, just not kept pace. In fiscal year 25, government agencies estimated that $186 billion of improper payments were made. So my question for you, Mr. Heller-Gadet, is what practical solutions should Congress prioritize to prevent improper payments and stop fraudulent behavior while still protecting critical programs that Americans rely on every day?
Front-end verification is really important. I believe Chairman Paul referred to this in his opening statement. We do not do enough of that. But also end-to-end transparency, reporting and disclosure at every step along the spending and funding chain is critically important. We also don't do much of that. So, you know, I don't need to tell you all this there in Congress, but the appropriations process is you all doing your thing with the money. It goes to federal agencies. Then federal agencies award it out to prime recipients. But then those prime recipients tend to parcel it out and award it out to a whole range of different sub-awardees and sub-recipients. That's where we really lose any meaningful insight into where the money's going, who's ending up with it, what is the impact that it's having. So if there was one sort of key, sort of close to a silver bullet I would recommend, it's getting our hands around sub-award reporting and transparency all the way up and down the chain from end to end.
Thank you.
I think that hits on the point is the payments all coming from the federal government, but the people being signing them up are not connected to the payment. So they're in the states, they're local, they want to help people. Oh, I want more people, let's help more people, and they add all the people to it, but they're not paying for it. You have to have the same people paying for it that are signing the people up. And until you connect those two people, you'll continue to have this problem. Senator Langford.
Senator Paul, thanks for holding this hearing as well. To all of you and the work that you do to help identify fraud and waste, thank you for the work on that. It's really about sunshine and trying to expose this out. For 9 years, I've been releasing what my team calls federal fumbles, where we just outline where areas that we see on waste and abuse and loss of federal dollars, over-regulation, and we throw those out there. What's been interesting is we've seen the same thing you have. When we identify the areas of waste, people shrink back away from it and say, okay, now we're going to try to be able to deal with this. It is the sunshine that really does make a difference. And what you're doing is bringing things to light on this. We've identified things like in 2023, the State Department was funding drag shows in Ecuador. The NEA was doing a social media game to increase physical activity in older women in creating a social media activity, which inherently sit there for that. There was a NEA created a production of what they called the Fat Pig, which was an opera to tell the story of a plus-size woman who falls in love with a man who has, quote-unquote, a normal body. We also did an NIH study that gave a research grant to be able to outline the history of tobacco use in Russia. We can go on and on and on through this. There's multiples that are out there. The Biden administration did a $250 million study in NIH to be able to study how to transition mice and monkeys into a different sex and how to create transgender mice and monkeys. All of those, once we exposed them, went away. All of them. So the challenge is trying to be able to highlight it, but also to be able to find it in advance. So I want to run several questions past you, and I've got several big issues. Ms. Shirley, how are you identifying initially what you're actually finding? Like, what's the tip that you're saying, I think there may be fraud there? How are you identifying that?
Yeah, a lot of the time I go through these databases and look for the largest amount of funding, and then also looking for the anomalies that come. For instance, in New York City, at these adult daycares, there were 7,899 patients enrolled into a daycare, an adult daycare, and they received $12.9 million. And I go to that daycare, there's only one floor, and it'd be quite frankly impossible to enroll that many patients into that daycare.
Yeah. So it's just going through the available public data on it.
Yes, and then also relying upon Americans. For instance, I learned about the Minnesota fraud from Minnesotans. I went there and they told me, hey, finally, you're here to make a video on the fraud. I said, well, what are you talking about? And they said, well, this fraud's happening. And so after that, for 6 months, I looked for that information about the fraud.
That's great. All right. That's very helpful on this. Mr. Hedlund-Godet, I have a question. It's a follow-up question on this. I'm a big advocate for GAO and for Inspector General. You and I have talked about that before. They're incredibly important to us. They are the investigators that Congress has hired, basically, to be able to put in these different agencies and be able to do oversight. The problem is they have the same access to data that Mr. Shirley has. When we get reports back from them, they're written very general many times, and there's not specifics, and we're not really able to highlight this kind of information, getting the practical information out. So the problem is not GAO and the Inspector General. It's getting the data and the information from them in the rawest form. They could have done this same thing that Mr. Shirley did, but they didn't. What would you suggest to help push good folks there to be able to take the next step and expose what's out there?
Thank you, Senator Lankford. And if I might, just for one moment, I just want to extend my appreciation to you for your work for years starting in the House on the Taxpayers' Right to Know Act, which you know this well, of course, but I don't know if everyone in this room does, but it created for the first time a federal program inventory, which is seemed kind of counterintuitive that such a thing didn't exist for a long time. But thanks to your work on that bill, it now does exist. So I commend you for your longstanding commitment to transparency and oversight when it comes to federal programs.
Appreciate that.
In response to your question, I agree with you that sometimes GAO reports, I mean, I love a good GAO report, but they are often kind of at a higher level of abstraction. They're still extremely valuable, I think, but I think sometimes GAO can get a little bit tentative if it gets too specific.
I describe them as safe. They're trying to write a safe report on a bad issue of fraud, and I don't need safe. I need raw information. That's what Mr. Shirley is actually bringing, is saying, here's the raw information.
Yeah, I'd be happy to see that too. And I think, I think creating more independence, as I mentioned earlier, for GAO could help with that problem because they would feel less insecure and less scared of potentially, upsetting some particular constituency who may, in fact, have control over their budget, right? So part of this is you really want watchdogs to be as much as possible within the bounds of like constitutional allowability. You want them to be as independent as possible so that they can do their work without fear or favor.
Okay, that's helpful. Mr. Keevy, I'm just going to make a comment to you. Thank you for the work that you're doing on trying to be able to expose issues in our election security. In Oklahoma, we have a very secure election system, and we work very hard on that, verifying. We've got voter ID. If you're going to do mail-in balloting, you have to have a notary to be able to verify that's actually you. We go through a lot of steps to be able to make sure we secure our election. I wish that was so in every state, but it is incredibly important for the trust that we actually have that. So I just want to tell you, I appreciate the work that you're doing. Look forward to getting a chance to read more of what you're doing.
Thank you.
Senator Scott.
Chairman, wouldn't a Democrat go next since the Republican just testified?
If there were a Democrat here, yes.
So there's no Democrats present at a hearing about fraud?
There doesn't appear to be a great deal of interest across the aisle. Senator Scott.
Thank you, Senator Moreno. It's hard to believe, isn't it? First off, thank you all for caring about election security. Mr. O'Keefe, your team returned to Skid Row after the DOG indicted somebody for election fraud and found the same operation running openly. Cash for signatures, fake voter data, and coaching on forgery. So walk us through what you documented and what it tells you about whether the indictment deterred anybody. How widespread is the model beyond Skid Row in Los Angeles? Based on your investigation, do you think this model could easily be replicated in other states and cities around the country?
Thank you, Senator. Yeah, within seconds of appearing on Skid Row, I personally, disguised as a homeless person, caught this behavior happening in broad daylight. So it's happening thousands of times. And I wanted to mention the names of these organizations, these petitioners that gather signatures to put on these initiatives in California. Urban Signers is one. One More Petition is another. So Brenda Brown was indicted by the Department of Justice. But the question remains, who's on the top orchestrating all of this? That's something we intend to find out. And I will be submitting to Senator Ron Johnson a request for subpoena to gather more information about that. And also, these people are logging in to an online database called sigvalid.com and pulling real names and voters. Those people's votes are disenfranchised. We went to their homes and we knocked on the door of them. And one of them said, what if I wanted to vote in this election? So this is a completely nonpartisan, nonpolitical issue. Mayor Karen Bass, the LADA, and the governor of California did not criticize me. They actually put statements out saying this is outrageous and needs to be exposed. The Department of Justice has indicted, but nobody in the state of California has yet arrested or prosecuted these people.
And what's Gavin Newsom done?
Put out a statement condemning the stuff that we exposed in the tape. That's it.
So doesn't he have investigation authority?
He does, in the state of California.
Doesn't Karen Bass?
She does.
And is it against the law?
It is. It's a state crime, fraudulently putting someone else's name on the California ballot petition.
If it wasn't for the federal government, nothing would happen.
We have to put tremendous pressure and find a way to incentivize these elected officials to do the right thing.
Have they also impacted ballot initiatives in California with invalid signatures?
Yes, these signatures are regarding California state elections.
Okay. And these NGOs, can you find out where they're getting the money?
We did.
State money, federal money, county money?
Yes, we did covertly interview some of the NGOs across the street. WineGuard is one. They received hundreds of millions of dollars of funding. And these NGOs are located literally across the street from the fraud that is happening. I testified that one man who represented himself, it was an NGO, pretended to be a police officer to intimidate my news organization from reporting on this abuse. That is also a state crime. So the NGOs see it happening and in our story actually encouraged it. They said, here's where you can do the cash for ballots. And those NGOs receive billions of dollars of federal funding.
Now, what are they getting the money for? What's under what premise do they get money?
It's the California homeless industrial complex. They're there to help, protect, and advance the mission of supporting the homeless population. But our reporting showed that the homeless here are actually the victims. We interviewed a lot of the homeless, and they were testifying to me that they were being taken advantage of. And all it takes is a few cigarettes, some marijuana, a few dollars, which doesn't sound like a lot to you and I, but it helps them buy a cheeseburger. So they're the victims, and that's what they told us.
Did you follow the Spencer Pratt race?
I did.
Were you surprised that he went from being the runner-up to being out of the race?
And all I can think about is tracing who's behind this fraud at the top. That's my interest, and that's my priority. It's because all the stuff you see out there is all circumstantial evidence. But what the U.S. attorney told me is the fact that we caught the cash exchange on camera, it led to an indictment. So I want to know who's orchestrating it at the top, and I intend to find out.
Do you think the U.S. attorney will go after the NGO?
He did what he told me he said he was going to do, but we need non-circumstantial evidence. We need direct cash payments on tape, incontrovertible evidence for the Department of Justice to do their job. I feel like that's my role. I feel citizen journalists don't have to deal with bureaucracy. We could just go there and get the story in a day, and that's what we intend to do.
All right. Thanks for what you're doing.
Senator Moreno.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for holding this hearing. And let me just point out again for the record that I think preventing fraud in government should be completely nonpartisan. It's not a Democrat issue or a Republican issue, yet almost the entirety of the Republican dais is filled with people sitting here listening to the entire hearing, and literally the entire Democrat dais is empty. I think that's, quite frankly, a disgrace. I think it's a disgrace to the people who pay taxes to know that there's an entire party that does not care whether taxpayer money is burnt. I think it's absolutely, completely outrageous. Mr. Shirley, I'll start with you. The previous Comptroller General of the GAO had been in office since 2011. What were you doing in 2011?
Playing football and basketball.
And what grade were you in?
At that time, I was 9 years old. So.
Nine? Gotcha. Yeah. So you were 9 years old. And this person served for 15 years in government. This idea that maybe we double down on that process that failed for 15 years, that somehow we'd be better off, and yet you went in at your risk and exposed fraud. I'm going to take a different angle. How does it make you feel as somebody who's 25 years old to know that your generation is going to pay the bill for everything that's happened right now? We have $40 trillion in debt.
Yeah,
and yet your generation is going to pay the price.
Yeah, I think that's the sad thing, is my generation's the one who's affected the most from this fraud and from the national debt. It's extremely hard for anyone my age to buy a home, even just to be able to accumulate the money to have a down payment inside your bank account. It's very, very hard. And so when you see a fraudster who literally opens up a Leering Center and they receive $1.9 million, and that was going on for years, and no one ever did anything. We had all this oversight. We had all, like, everyone knew about the fraud, but everyone was too afraid to talk about the fraud because of what would happen to them.
And what do you mean what would happen to them? Is it impolite that's to say that somebody's frauding defrauding the government if because there's of some certain race or gender or national origin? Is that somehow racist to say you should not steal money from the federal government?
It's not racist, but politically, it can be seen as racist. They may label you Islamophobic or a racist, quite frankly.
Well, I think Profiles in Courage wouldn't be something that would be written about the current members of the Democrat Party, for sure. And because, again, you think you would agree that they're just afraid of being labeled that way, and that fear drives them away from even attending a hearing like today?
Yeah, definitely. And it's very sad to see that they put that's their priorities, is to make sure that they're not labeled as a racist or Islamophobic for exposing fraud or for exposing what's happening inside a community. Quite frankly, they use the Somali population to commit the fraud. Ilhan Omar should be disgraced of what she did to the Somali population.
And when you look at people in your generation, can't afford a car, can't afford a house, don't see how in the future you'd be able to retire with any kind of dignity, and yet somebody can break into our country illegally, be provided a luxury hotel room in New York, three meals a day, maid service once a week, free education, free health care. What goes through your head when you think about that?
Like, how does this happen? We're putting foreigners oftentimes above American citizens, and it's very, very sad to see.
And Mr. Hetler-Gaudet, I want to drill back down to the numbers you provided, because I want to make sure I heard them correctly. You talked about, again, we're here to talk about fraud. We can talk about waste in a different hearing. We're here to talk about fraud. You mentioned in 2025, what was the number that you said? You knew the numbers off the top of your head pretty well. Impressive.
GAO estimated that in fiscal year 2025, we issued $186 billion in improper payments.
So $186 billion in 2025. From 17 to 20, which is President Trump's first term, that number by GAO is estimated to be $672 billion. Does that sound right?
I don't have that GAO number off the top of my head, but...
Yeah, sounds right. Yeah, generally. Again, GAO citing their numbers. And from 2020 to 2024, that number under Biden was $925 billion.
So I would point out 2020 is still the Trump administration.
No, this is fiscal year. So this would start October 1st.
Okay.
So it was a 38% increase, and it's been massively cut back by President Trump in his second term. I don't know that that's the greatest case to be made, that the entire issue is because we have these inspector generals that have failed dramatically since the time Nick Shirley was playing basketball in his driveway when he was 9 years old. I think what we need to do here, Mr. Chairman, is take this topic very seriously. I think the American people are sick and tired of hearings, honestly. I think they need to see people who are held accountable, that go to jail. And until we do that, I don't know that we have the confidence of people. I feel badly for next generation, honestly. I don't know how they look at it and say, this government's just failing us. And the sense of disenfranchisement with the American government. I mean, I just can't wrap my head around the fact that Democrats care so little about this topic that they don't even show up. They didn't show up at your session either, Senator Johnson, when we talked about this exact topic in your committee. And ultimately, if your elected leaders don't give a crap about how government spends money, it's an indictment on that. And even worse, the media just won't even talk about it. There will be more stories on CNN tonight about the reflecting pond being empty than the fact that you had a hearing today about trillions of dollars of fraud. And that is the problem. The media is complicit. The Democrats are complicit, because that's ultimately, you have to think, what keeps them in power. So with that, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Senate Homeland Security Committee titled Exposing Fraud in America. Once again, citizen journalists had put to shame the spectrum of corporate and independent media, plus the government inspector general's office. They were put on notice in how the IG actually needed to expose the mind-blowing levels of fraud
not Nick Shirley, not James O'Keefe, and the many other citizen journalists now trending in that direction. Oddly, no Democrat attended this hearing. Is it that Republicans don't grift and cheat? Well, of course, that's not the case. But is this not a certain pullback on a broader economic issue? Is this one scenario where instead of lowering housing prices, the cost of groceries, vehicles, etc., the country had been flooded with caravan after caravan of millions and millions of people from various countries, and they were given millions in tax dollars to prop up purchase power, and all of this occurs when millions are dying from the poison jab? We all know this. The bigger problem in this country is something most also know about, and that's the policymaking issued by the Democratic Party. Their policy has been rejected wholesale by the majority of people in this country. In order for them to get elected, many believe that the Democrats will need to cheat and grift. I used to think of this as economic warfare perpetrated by foreign countries. I realize that's very naive because in order for Somalians, Ukrainians, Chinese, and many more foreign agents to ship billions in taxpayer, U.S. taxpayer money to their home country, backroom agreements must commence. Many believe those within the deeper state and intel agencies have launched an economic warfare against the people in the United States. When foreign interests organize to loot federal Medicare accounts allotted for taxpaying U.S. citizens, and it's ignored for years, what's really happening? What bizarre world do we live in? It's a version of the Truman Show, where no one has a job, they're on the take, and it's a huge operation creating the illusion of an economy. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit InOtherNewsRadio.com for archives and more information about the guests.